large aerospace corporation, and I am supposed to do some marketing, so if anyone here would care to buy an F-16, I can point you in the right place. I work mainly at Gateway. Being a large corporation, one of the major panics these days are the email attacks we see. And they aren't deliberate. I mean, I know nobody's really trying to do it. They don't realize what kind of an effect a couple of 100,000 messages can have on an email gateway designed for 35,000 max. Now, ours is a little bigger than that, but it also makes an interesting characteristic. One of the things we see is a lot of narrow attacks, narrow defenses, if you'll pardon my use of that term, that are mainly designed for single machines, local networks, small areas. You very rarely... Sorry about that. Is this better? Wait. Hello? Are you out there? Okay, sorry about that. You know, the nice ones are the ones that clip on, so I don't have to worry about it, because I tend to wave hands around, which means I have to switch hands every time I want to wave one. But that's all right. Turn off the other microphone. I warned you I get wrapped up in things. At any rate, we're going to talk about gateway characteristics, some of the disadvantages large corporations have, and some of the advantages, and some of the things that you can do to protect a major gateway that really isn't available to somebody at home. In fact, somebody at home really wouldn't want to do these things. But earlier at lunch, the gentleman speaking was talking about language. That was a very good point, but I didn't hear him amplify it to a certain extent, that I was thinking at the time that the language of the network defines what it is. The protocols, the instructions you give a program, the instructions you can give a firewall or gateway or a router, those define what the network is. But very few people speak that language. Very few people take the time to learn that language. Instead, they try to bend it into their native language, which doesn't contain many of the concepts, many of the vulnerabilities, many of the capabilities. I mean, what is the difference between a bug and a feature? It's your perception of it. So unless you understand the language of the network, you aren't going to understand what's liable to happen. You haven't defined the envelope of capability. But one of the things we're going to talk about is that envelope, and the fact that if you can define the operating envelope of the network, or a gateway, or an email capability, then you're a long way to identifying, well, where are the choke points? What are the things that must happen for an attack to take place? And then you can make a rational decision whether to mitigate that risk by simply eliminating those constructs because you don't need them, or by accepting the risk with limitations or further filtering. But unless you know what those constructs and choke points are, you have no way to calculate that risk. Okay, in really recent months, the most major problem facing large corporations have been the mass mailers. We've had denial of service attacks. What was when we had the Trino and barbed wire attacks? Denial of service. What was the half-life? About 4 hours? What was the half-life of people affected by love letter? About 2 days? Which had more of an impact? Not which was more visible or publicized, but which actually had a greater impact? And it's these mass mailers. Because they affect business, and anything that affects the capability of business to operate is not very good for that business. And if you can affect many businesses, you have a major effect. Lloyd's of London estimated the effect of Love Letter at $6 billion. Now, I find that humorous, because they have got to have been taking into account doomsday effects on everybody in the planet, when actually it affected relatively few people. But say an order of magnitude less, and we're still at 600 million, and that's real money, at least to somebody like myself. It gets people attention fast. At any rate, the mass mailers take many forms. Word documents, Melissa, Excel spreadsheets, Papa, VBS files, Love Letter, script files, CAC. Are they all completely different? Do they seem completely different? Or do they have common factors in how they operate? That if you can just take care of that single common factor, then maybe you can have an effect on all of these. They all have common roots. Anybody know what that root would be? Every one of these is a macro of some sort that relies on scripting. How long ago do we see scripting viruses? Well, Dr. Harold Hyland predicted it in 1989. We saw the first one in 1995, the concept. And since then, really, we knew early on this was capable. So what do we have? What's our defense against these? Scanners, right? Scanners against known viruses. So every time a new attack comes along, we have Melissa in 1999, we get Love Letter using the same constructs this year, and people are surprised. I'm going to talk about that a little bit. Okay, first question, why are they so easy? Well, it's not a bug, it's a feature. And for anyone who has the spare time, I know I haven't, my biggest problem is time. Time to be able to defend a very broad spectrum network against possible attacks. What is the great advantage of the attackers? Well, most of them have time. If they can get a hold of the stack of the platinum distribution of disk, you will find many, many, many capabilities, some of which are more capable than others. Just like this one, using email in your application. Everybody wants to send email from inside Excel, right? You want your spreadsheets mailing to people? You write your Christmas cards and table formulas? I mean, this is a feature. Why is it a feature? Well, that wasn't designed for just Excel. It was designed for a multitude of different applications, some of which had legitimate reasons for wanting to be able to send email. I haven't run into any, but I know there must be some out there. But the fact is that the same construct used for Melissa and Love Letter is also what Outlook uses. Because up until now, there has been no separation of the request. It simply says, send mail. What is sending mail hasn't been important. Whether it's something that should be sending mail or shouldn't be sending mail hasn't been important. Of course, now we've got that marvelous 8-megabyte patch. Anyway, from a corporate standpoint, the really disruptive mechanisms are not all the mass mailers. It's those which use the GAL, the global address list. In a large corporation, that global address list is liable to exceed 100,000 people. In a global address list, you're also liable to find things called distribution lists. And distribution lists pointing to other distribution lists. One of the characteristics we have found when under attack, and this is another data point you have to deal with, is that the early information is going to be wrong. Has anyone ever seen a totally accurate news piece? CNN, US News, anybody that was completely accurate? Of course, if you can spot the problems, you didn't need the newscast in the first place. And this is one of the things I run into a lot. 4 out of every 5 panics that occur don't or aren't. They fizzle. The straws are bent, so the boost never occurs. They don't work most of the time, but the media picks it up on the premise that it's likely to, so they won't be caught napping later, because they have turnaround times. And today, the gestation time of a event is in hours. When Love Letter occurred, we had advance warning from our London office, and were able to respond very quickly for a couple of reasons I'll get into. So it became essentially a non-event to most users, other than they had a fairly quiet morning. But when you use the GAL, the potential for one of those mass mailers is thousands of messages. Now I've got some numbers up there. How many people remember the first report of Melissa being it sent out 50 messages? A couple of people? That's what CERT had for over a week. Okay, picture a large hypothetical corporation. 220,000 infected messages in the stores after the vendor product has swept the stores, incidentally obliterating all of the sender information. 50 messages per infected machine, 220,000 infected messages. That means, oh my God, everything's infected. This is why companies shut down. Now, in truth, when you consider a GAL of, say, 103,000 users with distribution lists, et cetera, what was the real mass mailing of a single infection? Would you believe over 50,000 messages? I'm serious. Love letter over 200,000 because it didn't have the 50 limit on each address store. But the point I'm making here, they can have tremendous effects, but only if they affect the global address list. Why? How many people have a personal address book for Outlook on their machine? Does it have less than 100 entries in it? Okay, you're silly. But most people don't have 50,000 entries in their personal address book. So the first criteria is, okay, a mass mailer spreading, what does it affect? You ever see that information in an early report? Which means panic, because people don't know what's really happening. The only way to know what's really happening is to look at it. Now, thus far, we can make one generalization. I have not seen an EXE infection that tries to do mass mailing that affects the GAL. It's always local, the desktop address books. And within a corporation, that's not as much of a problem unless for some reason you're using Outlook Express. Most people use Outlook and Exchange servers, in which case an EXE thus far is not a problem. And one thing I'm going to be stressing, you hear a lot of people saying, oh, we can't possibly fix that forever because somebody will find a way around it. I'll let you know a secret. My job is not to protect forever. My job is to protect today. Tactical, not strategic. And that's the difference. And that outlook is what makes really the difference of crisis management, which we're getting into very much. So far, we can make some generalizations. All attacks using the Exchange Gal so far, and I'm just going to talk about Exchange because that's what I know about. I really don't know that much about Lotus Notes. I don't claim to. I could, but I don't. So at any rate, the ones we really see are all Visual Basic based. VBA, Visual Basic Scripting, ActiveF. Visual Basic Scripting is very interesting because if you read all the documentation for it, it says it has no file I.O. capability. Actually, that's not quite right. What it says is it has no conventional file I.O. capability. Pretty soon you find out there are some unconventional means, or at least the virus writers did very quickly. Okay, MAPI. That is the essential point. For the mass mailer to affect a major corporation, you have to reach MAPI. Now, why? What is that? Because that is the internal mechanism within the exchange that allows you to reach the global address list. If the program isn't running MAPI today, I'm not saying somebody won't find a way, but today, it's not going to be a mass mailer. So if you really want to know about it, there's the URL. It should be in your handout. Okay, let's look backwards a bit. Late 97, early 98, when Microsoft started announcing, I'm sorry, I just included the vendor's name. I shouldn't have done that. At any rate, an unknown vendor was told that Create Object was not a good idea. In fact, by certain people, numerous people around the world who knew this wasn't a good idea. And as usual, it was ignored. I'm sure a few of you heard of the Russian New Year exploit that never really materialized. But the fact was that this was late 97, early 98, it was demonstrated that you could drop files, you could use that non-conventional file I.O. to do file I.O. And that is what created the problem. This is what let programs out of the sandbox. Now, it is very unlikely that that is going to be removed because that's not a bug, that's a feature. This is what enables unattended updating. This is what is going to allow USEDA, which has now passed in Maryland and Virginia. Anyone familiar with USEDA? Where vendors can check on the programs what version they're running and are they licensed properly. Do USEDA, this must be in the operating system. So now you know why it is never going to be turned off entirely. Okay, Russian New Year came out. Patch was issued very quickly, within days. So fast. I mean, I am absolutely astounded how fast some of these patches come out. Because for anybody hit blind with something they never heard of, you would expect it to take several days or probably a week to figure out what to patch, what was affected, run it through QC, but somehow they miraculously occur almost instantaneously. Unfortunately, in that case, the patch itself was only a couple hundred K. But you had to have Service Pack 1 installed, and that was 32 megabyte download if you had the original version of Office 97. In fact, this is something I haven't seen mentioned. I really need to total it up. There are over 120-some security bulletins issued by a certain vendor so far. And I suspect if you total all the patches together, you would probably come up with something like 100 megabytes of downloads and installations you would have to go through. Certainly it's over 50 megabytes. And guess what happens as soon as the next update to the program comes out? All the patches go away. So unless it was in the update, that's one of the reasons we have a real problem. They are providing updates for those who really want it, but they aren't. And interesting thing was PowerPoint was ignored at that point, even though people had said This isn't just Word. This isn't just Excel. This is potentially any Office product that runs VBA. And so the interesting thing we come up with, that's my toy. Now, the interesting thing was, I almost put that in a Christmas card for 1997. The interesting thing about that was sent in an email. That picture was not inside the corporate boundaries. That picture was actually on my local ISP out on the internet. But the HTML code to launch that picture, that JPG in the end, was out on the internet. So you could send an email that had enclosures, and those enclosures would run automatically on opening. In fact, if you had preview pane on, it would open automatically, period, if it was sitting on the top of your message store when you opened the mail reader. This is why today you're hearing about things that can infect as soon as you open the program without reading any email. That isn't completely true. A couple of operations have to occur. In fact, that's one of the... You know how you tell a hoax? Because it's going to destroy everything regardless of the operating system, regardless of the client or the platform. It's just going to destroy everything. So as soon as you see something that says... As soon as you open your email, it's going to hurt. Without being specific about it, then you haven't gotten all the information yet. Just a clue to watch for. Okay, skip to July. Ooh. Anyone see this one? Early 1998, we said Word, Excel, and PowerPoint were all vulnerable to HTML embedding in email. So guess what just got discovered this month? We aren't in August yet. Well, there was Excel again and PowerPoint. Same ones that people had noticed early on. Now, why have we noticed this? Because that file transfer capability was really in there. Now, does anyone need the file transfer capability? That's a question. Since then, there's a partial list of viruses that are mass mailers. Some very nice people put together a list of those, and this is just a partial one which happened to fit in the single column on the slide. There are actually quite a few different variations by now. A lot of them, but they all have the same things in common. And what is it? Create object, that non-traditional file I/O capability. Now let's see if I can do wrong one. There we go. Sorry, I never learned how to type properly. This is the original Melissa. Guess what we've got? Create object. Happens to be Outlook application, and you've got a mappy call down in there. But what makes the program possible is that create object construct that lets the virus out of the sandbox. In fact, that wouldn't stop it from being a virus without that working, which it didn't on many machines. It was just a conventional Word macro virus. Not very interesting. About the same infectivity capability as Concept. But that one piece made it different. Mappy, the mass mailer. In fact, if you notice down there, there are two loops, which should have been the giveaway. One of those loops is set to, if X is greater than 50, quit. That's your 50 limit. But notice that's in the second loop. The first loop is every mail store within the gal. Now, the vendor had it wrong. We still had it wrong by Monday of that week. It had been discovered Friday. CERT had it wrong. NIPC had it wrong. Don't ever mention my name around Mike Vadas. I've been complaining about incomplete information. It's too little, too late, and wrong, which is very bad from a corporate standpoint when you're in the middle of an attack and trying to figure out what to do about it. That's why crisis management is emerging as a completely separate discipline, of unlike traditional programming, which you have a lot of testing, you've got QC. Before you ever release something, you know exactly what it's going to do. Here, when these things happen, you have to make guesses fast and make the right ones. I don't know, I guess that makes it an art form, doesn't it? Or maybe should take it to the casino. That's what the next matter is going to be. But at any rate, there's Melissa. March 1999, major event, millions of dollars reported lost by major companies, okay? Let's see. So let's skip to this year. Now, this is a nice, dumb 1986-type program that just does exactly what I want it to do. Guess what we've got? Does that look familiar? In this case, it's a scripting file system object. That's Love Letter. What do they have in common? What do every one of these viruses I've mentioned have in common? Create object. How many people want mail dumping programs on their disk? But that's all you need to look for, because every one of these constructs uses that. Now, let's be proactive about it. See, I wonder which one that is. That's the wrong one. There we go. Okay, there are four of them, actually. Create object, get object is there. If you know a file already exists, you can dump it, you can overwrite it and cause the same thing. Now, what's one of the things that's been happening with JPEGs, for instance? They've been getting overwritten with VBSs. It looks for programs that are there. Get object gives that same capability. And there are two others. Create text object. Now, you wouldn't think create text object would be bad, would you? Anyone ever hear of executable ASCII? Would you believe, and this is one of the things I find very interesting. Oh, let's flip back here. Do you see those two COM files? Says hello world, right? Takes 23 bytes to do it. See, another one takes 290 bytes. The same thing, right? Executable, just print some text out. There is one major difference. Would you type a COM file? That's executable ASCII. If you look at the Intel instruction set, and this is what I was talking about, by really understanding the system you're working with, if you look at the Intel command set, you can separate those instructions that exist between 20 hex, which is a space, and 7E hex, which is the uppermost printing character. And you will find that there are enough instructions there. Oh, let's do something interesting. You will find there are enough instructions there to write a complete program. You don't need the complete instruction set. Now, that's something some friends of mine talked me out of sending a Christmas card that way one year. They said, and this is a dilemma for security people. And this comes back to something that Marcus said this morning. If there are people who would release that to the world and never think a second thought about it. My dilemma was that if I release this, is it liable to be used for malicious purpose? Because it's a toy. It has no real function other than some people were saying, hey, you can't send virus in email. And I was saying, why not? And some people said, well, you can. And I said, well, you can, and here's how. You know, one of those engineering challenges. Between us, I consider the first 64 bytes of that program the most elegant code I've ever written. It was not easy. You wouldn't believe what the stack does while it's playing with that. But at any rate, that's why create text object and get text object are also dangerous. So what have we got? We have four constructs in the Visual Basic language that are required use by writers. There's one more I'll get to in a few minutes. But these are the obvious ones. So what is easier? A scanner that looks for 50,000 viruses in every email that comes across, or a scanner that happens to look for four text strings within scripting. And there's another value. You see a lot of people talking, block all the scripting. How many people have scripting blocked at their firewalls? Anybody? Yeah, we tried it for a while over Y2K. Do you have any executives who try to get to Marriott.com, look for a hotel while traveling? No, that's why. Because guess what breaks? Half the hotels' pull reservations break if you block all scripting. Now why? That isn't because they have written their pages wrong. And this is a very interesting, this is a second generation problem. If you block all scripting, most pages have a section. In other words, you just excise everything between script language, something, and end script. Just wipe that out. Most good programming says you'll have a section down below that says no scripting for those browsers that don't understand scripting. But unless you've gone back to all 100,000+ desktops and turned off scripting on every single one of those desktops, it won't know it is supposed to use the no scripting part of the HTML. So it will try to execute the part that was relying on scripting, except the scripting won't be there. And you get a blank page. And executives don't like blank pages. So much for blocking all scripting. Okay, what's the other next thing? Block all executables. Well, what's an executable? I've just shown you an executable can be text. You just have to tell DOS to execute it. And that isn't that difficult. Quite often, if the operating system can't figure out what it is, it'll just open the file. Believe it or not, open the file, look at the first couple of bytes, say, this must be that kind of an operation, and pass it over to the appropriate application. Now, that's not a bug. That's a feature. But it also means you can't rely on extensions. And we got an incredible number of them anyway. Now, there are better answers. Well, suppose you could allow only permitted extensions. Well, there's a minor problem with that. Apparently, using Netscape proxy gateways, you can't say allow all except these four or five or six. All it can do is say which ones you're blocking. The logic isn't there to say block all except. Standard. In other words, if you could program a proxy the same way we program routers, everything would be fine. But for some reason, apparently no one ever thought somebody'd want to. Okay, how about block anything with those four? Well, we see some people working on that. But most capability is not block scripting if it contains a create object, but block scripting. The granularity isn't there yet. And most vendors, when I've asked them about it, look at me rather strangely. Why on earth would you want to do that? And then I have to explain, because this isn't obvious. Obvious, isn't it? If you could block just those four, now you've reestablished the sandbox. Remember the sandboxes? And by doing that, you don't have to worry about the latest news bulletin because you were already covered for it. Now, you wouldn't want to do that with a signature scanner on a desktop. Well, why wouldn't you? Well, for one thing, there are these demo and sample directories scattered throughout the operating system, and guess what every one of those scanners will start flagging on? Because they're in the samples. I've never seen people actually use them for other things. Anyone ever use create object for something constructive? You have. You figured out a way.
Create NT accounts and do account management on the network.
Okay. On your network. Any reason to pass the gateway? So see, something that can work for a corporation, you wouldn't use locally. You don't have to. That's why you don't want them on desktops. You do want them on gateways and mail servers. Possibly in your exception, you might not want them on mail servers. And of course, we're moving towards something where you don't send any attachments in mail at all. What gets sent is a URL for wherever the thing is. This way, when you send to a distribution list, you don't send a MEG file to everybody, but the ones who want to go randomly to a website and can download it. Performance gain. Believe it or not, security can add to performance. Okay, the vendor does have an 8 megabyte patch for Office 97, 2 megabyte for 2000. Affects many things. If anyone's looked at that URL, list of 13 things that don't work. Incidental. Does seem to work with today's problems, but what about tomorrow? There are already exploits that get around the patch. One of them, for example, is you write an executable to temp directory. Has anyone noticed when you get the warning window after applying the patch? You don't get it before the file is downloaded. You'll see a pause there if it's a big file. It is after the file has downloaded the temp directory, and it's sitting there. It's just if you say no, it doesn't execute it. So what happens if the next email comes along and says, execute something that's already on the machine, local? Not only is it being discussed, it's been seen already. Okay, desktop, best answer is probably Integrity Manager. Unfortunately, they all went out of business because everybody buys signature scanners. Even though the signature scanners are now starting to build heuristics in, they can find a lot of that. It's the only way to keep up anymore. But suppose you had something that simply recognized any time a network-enabled application attempted to download or run a file. Of course, one of the things you're going to break is active update. And so no way the manufacturer is going to do that one. So you find these kludges. Those are really the three areas that need protection. Email downloads, browser downloads, FTP. Cover those three elements, and you've just identified the choke points. You don't have to block everything going on the program. You don't have to block your Palm Pilot connection download to the Palm with a warning screen. You just have to be selective, surgical precision. Identify the choke points. Okay, I mentioned a fifth construct. It's that one. Anyone ever use a CLSID? I guarantee you've never seen it. Anyone even know what they are? These identify those programs within the Windows operating system, because it only exists in the registry, that are marked safe for scripting. Now, the last time I looked at a standard installation, there were over 119 different elements from the movie player, Real 3D, all the office applications. They were already marked safe for scripting. Why? Because the manufacturer says they don't want to bother the user with warning screens with certain items. Now, I've never managed to identify what all the 119 are, but so far we've had at least two specific security bulletins from their website identifying these. Remember the tightlib iDog? That was a CLS ID. Remember the Bubble Boy and CAC viruses? Well, Bubble Boy. Guess how Bubble Boy worked. Anyone know why Bubble Boy didn't work? It was about a year ago. And originally, there was a lot of concern about the Bubble Boy. The reason the Bubble Boy didn't work was because one of the thing calls it made, and not even anything essential, called something that only existed within Internet Explorer 5. And at that time, not that many people had Internet Explorer version 5. Now, earlier this morning, we talked about full disclosure, right? I just gave you selective disclosure. Bubble Boy works with Internet Explorer version 5. Do you really have to know more than that in order to have a defense, to know which of your machines are going to liable to be affected by this? Well, at any rate, it uses CLS ID. And then you have this long number identifying which one it is. But that should never appear in an email. So what's the fifth construct that you block at the gateway? CLS ID. And you just took care of Bubble Boy and CAC and any of the followers using that same construct. So we've got five constructs, two creates, two gets, all involving object. In fact, objects are a lot of fun in HTML, particularly if there's no filtering on them. I mean, is there any reason for... I'm not going to go into that. Sorry. I do it too often. Anyway, like I said, it shouldn't be in a script anyway, much less in an email script. Okay, conclusions. Where are we? Okay, I've got about 20 minutes, I guess. Of course, I am the only thing between you and the reception. So, gateways. Filters need to be developed. This shouldn't be rocket science, but it does require a significant proportion of the population talking to the vendor and say, hey, we need this. So we need filters to develop that are both specific and granular. By the way, one of the other things I received from our antivirus vendor, even though they thought I was nuts at the time for requesting it, was a specific add-on. Are you familiar with extra files that you drop in the antivirus directory that look for strange things? Well, I got them to create one for me that just picked up create object and get object. And they thought I was nuts. They said I have lots of false positives. And I said, I know. And yes, it did. That happened to be a week before Love Letter hit. Now, we ran through a very interesting sequence. We got a report from the UK at about 2 a.m. By 5 a.m., I had a sample sitting in the inbox of my mail, so I could tell what we were looking at. I had this extra point dat. I knew the extra point dat, this creative, this heuristic one, would catch the love letter. So our first reaction was shut down the mail gateways until we can honor it. And here, interesting thing is our enterprise service desk has the authority to shut down the gateways if an event appears to be happening. you know, horrors to an IT organization. Shut the gateway, especially give some low-level person the authority to shut it. Well, guess what? You can shut a mail gateway for a half hour, and I guarantee you almost no one will notice. Mail gets a little light, you know, take a coffee break, get a little heavier afternoon than you normally expect, but that was the effect. Okay, half hour, shut the gateway. One other thing that our security group has is an arrangement with the gateway people. If we say put a filter on the gateway, we have a commitment that within a half hour, and generally they hit 15 minutes, we can get that filter on the gateway because we pre-deployed these filters. They already have them. We just say which one to put on. And this isn't something you leave on all the time because of the false positive rate. But it does take care of that next gap. What gap am I talking about? Well, our antivirus vendor generally will give us a new solution to a new problem within 4 hours. In this case, they wound up having to give us 3 in stages as the different versions of the love letter appeared. But so, first reaction, half hour, gateway shut. Second reaction, strange, granular, very coarse filter goes in the gateway that stops it but opens the email up again. Third, response from the vendor. That's a surgical response. At that point, we're back up to full production again. Users, very few of them actually noticed anything happened. So it works. It's just strange. It's a different concept, a different way of thinking about it, and requires understanding the language of the network. So you can say, if I do this, that's going to be blocked. And you can say, looking at it, these are the constructs that appear to be able to enable malicious attacks. So let's pre-deploy some filters against each of those constructs so when something happens, we can put something on immediately. That's crisis management. We don't know exactly what's happening, but we can tell it's in this range of operations. So if we block that, we're pretty much going to be safe. And it's not a guarantee you're going to be safe. But we all make mistakes. Just some of us happen to make less than others. And I guess that's the best any of us can do. So at any rate, filters need to be able to do that immediate reconfiguration. Years ago, we had time. I would say 2 years ago, I remember being at one conference in California, and we said, you don't have time anymore. Attacks happen too fast. In fact, Marcus was one of the people talking seminally about active gateways, would you believe, in 1994? This was being discussed. Nobody wanted, nobody knew what we were talking about. But now it's starting to be important. And so it wasn't that difficult to figure out what to do when these start happening. So there's the library, your commitment, there's your checklist. That's what you need to be able to accomplish this sort of thing. Okay. Gateways have multiple products. Be able to install quickly. Remember when Melissa hit at 3 a.m., I was on the telephone to London arranging a handwritten fax with authority to put a product on our gateway when we found out that what we had was missing things. Have those lines of communication set up before they ever happen. I've had some people call that an unfair advantage. It's just a matter of work. Okay, desktop, integrity manager, behavior blockers, that may be necessary to crank them up. But I don't consider the desktop to be a point that we can control quickly enough. When you've got something that can saturate a network in an hour, and you can't touch those 160,000 machines that fast. It's just not a good way. I can touch 3 major gateways, 25 sub-gateways, 1X400 I just shut off, 120-some email servers. That I can touch. Those we can control. We can set up watertight doors between the sites and say, if necessary, we need to compartment this site. But you can't have a delay. You've got to set that up in advance so that when you say, we must do this, it happens now, because that's the only way to control things like this, is by eliminating the critical mass before it can get started. I will say it works. Any questions? Comments? Panic? Stunned? Silence? Sir?
You said blocking the get out and create out there caused too many false positives.
What was causing the false positives?
Oh, well, on the desktop, I was getting false positives from almost every set of sample directories within Office. For instance, there was a set of samples that were using create object within Excel, for Excel or for Word, to say, if you want to do this, here's how. I mean, it's one of the greatest tutorials you've ever seen. But that's where I was seeing the false positives. And like the gentleman said, there are some internal circulating things that are liable to use it, which is why you put it on the gateway. Sir?
What we did on our gateway is we had a filter coming in as a firewall to check every email connection. And if it was a BBS, we can't, figuring that there's no reason why someone should receive a BBS attachment. But what you were mentioning is, if it's an unknown attachment, say ABC, that Windows will attempt to recognize it, and it wouldn't detect that it's a BBS and then execute that BBS anyway.
I haven't documented it fully, but if anyone ever used Macintoshes on network with the version of Office on the Mac, if you sent a document from a Macintosh to a PC on the network as an attachment, the Macintosh doesn't use extensions the same way that DOS does. So they would come across without any extension on it. And Windows would discover what the proper extension was. In fact, this was something we had a lot of problem with the antivirus vendors. And if you ever want an interesting thing, look in the extension list and see if the extension TMP is in there. Because if a document comes across without an extension, such as a Word document, the Microsoft operating system will assign an extension of TMP. And we had some problems when Concept was running around with infections reinfecting with programs that would be picked up immediately. We couldn't figure out where it came from, and it turned out it was coming from these TMP files. So, and if you remember the love letter, it was .txt, .vbs. And there's a lot of games you can play. For instance, one thing you might have a filter for is anything that has a double extension on it. How hard is a search for two periods inside a file name? That's the type of filter I'm talking about. Some of the variables of things that we allow right now. For instance, it's very easy for us just to chop all extensions. I mean, all attachments. That's a temporary answer. Wouldn't last very long, but it's a temporary answer until we can get everybody over to sending URLs rather than files themselves. I'm not giving you something that'll work 100% every time. I am giving you something that will work 95% today. What more can we do? Sir? I'm sorry?
Will these PowerPoints be posted on the Black Hat website?
I have no idea if they are.
Have you given them to Jeff?
Oh, yes. Jeff received them in plenty of time. I have no idea if they're up. However, if you send email to me, I'll send you a copy of it. I won't send you the virus code, though. Sir?
Slide 17 one more time, please.
Slide 17. 29, 8, and 17. Yeah, that's just because it's a way to bypass even the non-traditional file I/O by something that generates its own file I/O. See, if you can plant a Trojan on the machine, it can do anything. So, however, in the past, people have been remarkably unsuccessful in just planting something the first time. We've had incidents, but it hasn't been very often. We're working on some other thing. Would you believe the first time I saw a really fast-spreading virus was 1990? 2,000 infected machines in under 3 hours. Of course, that was Jerusalem. Took about a 200-byte program to detect it, and we just put it in the login script, and every time somebody tried to log in, they'd check it. We really aren't talking anything any more sophisticated. It's just different. Thank you.